with us working with so many different teams and different motorsports or whatever it may be, like, I always just kind of think to myself, like, me and Max always talk in the office and say, like, you know, what do we got to do to get out there on track and kind of just get in there and start doing some stuff? Because I don't really have too much on-track experience at all. I don't have any, really. But, like, you know, then I start breaking down budgets. Me and Max start talking about some sort of, like, projects that we could possibly do, maybe just get ourselves on there. And I just start thinking, man, you gotta really kind of have some money in the bank to start getting this going, or kind of, you know, be able to start off, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, racing, clearly, you know, there's an expense that comes with it, right? But yeah, the expense has, there's like, think of it as tax brackets, right? It's sort of the range of costs associated with racing. And there's ways of getting into it that are relatively affordable. And a lot of times, a lot of what we support more on the grassroots side of things, you know, series like SCCA and NASA, there's Chump Car, there's Lemons, like there's a lot of different ways for people to get into it. Mm-hmm. And I guess the biggest question is, like, how does one get into it, right? Or what do you get into?
Yeah.
I mean, from your guys' perspective, like, Rich, I mean, you do car shows and stuff like that, but would you have interest in doing track time?
Yeah, I mean, for me, myself, if I ever got myself on track seriously, I think I would only want to do maybe like I think endurance racing really appeals to me, because I think I can get together with just my friends, ragtag team, and not a real professional program, or, you know, even remotely amateur program, or whatever you want to call it, and just get on track and have fun and have a car that's typically, you know, maybe not the most high maintenance, or, you know, you need to put a lot of money into to get it going well. So endurance racing in that sense, for like a Lemons race or something, would be really fun. And then, I don't know. I mean, I think time attack would be really cool. Like, I like going fast, and I think just, you know, I have a real competitiveness to me. So, like, being able to, you know, go out there and try to go against the time and the clock, I mean, that's something that appeals to me. But I know you love your, you know, kind of IndyCar stuff or whatever it may be.
I mean, IndyCar is definitely something I follow. I follow Trans Am. Like, I was just up at Road America this past weekend for the Trans Am race. Mm-hmm. And had an opportunity to, you know, see the cars a little closer, you know, closer in person. And then also looking at some other series. One is called the Prototype Sprint Association, I think it is.
Cool.
And those guys are running, you know, yes, these are race car, like dedicated race cars, like smaller prototypes. Like one of the cars was a Sebeco, and yeah, the buy-in's a little bit more, but like the cost, like you brought this up earlier, as far as maintenance and just sort of keeping up with the Joneses in the world of racing, you know, a race weekend can get real expensive real fast.
Right.
And like in the case of like those Sebeco cars, I think the buy-in is like 100, which, don't get me wrong, is expensive. But then they're running the same set of tires for the entire weekend. Brakes will last multiple races, things like that. And then also at the event was the Optima Ultimate Street Car Challenge, which, you know, for those, I think, that are interested in getting into racing, it's a great way of scratching that itch to see if it's something you want to do, because it is more of like time attack. And then they have a stop start challenge. And then usually you can get on track. I mean, I was combing through the pits for that event and saw a lot of, you know, Miatas and Civics, the crazy MR2 that I saw there that was running like 12-inch heliograms on an MR2.
Damn.
I mean, that thing was stretched out in the back end, but talk about a party and a great way to just see if it scratch is worth the itch.
Well, for the Sebeco that you were saying, one, Sebeco, is it a manufacturer? Is it like a kit car? Or
it's a manufacturer. So they're actually a stone's throw from Road Atlanta.
Okay.
They're just around the corner from there. And I think they probably make like 15 to 25 cars a year or something,
but
like that.
But they don't make passenger cars.
No. They are purely, like, if you're going that realm, like, that is a dedicated track car. Like, mm-hmm. You're not on the road with that thing.
But you were saying that the buying price of like 100 grand, you're saying that's affordable?
Well, okay, let's rewind a little bit, right? Like, say you want to dedicate your time of getting into racing, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's just say, for simple of easiness here, Mazda Miata, right? So mm-hmm. The Miata has been used as a training car for racing for, what, 20-plus years, something like that? there's the Road to Indy program. So if you want to try to be an Indy car driver and have aspirations of getting into professional motorsports, there's Road to Indy, and the cars they use are Miatas, right? So you can find, I mean, you're a Miata owner. So mm-hmm. you tell me, like, what would be your price threshold for getting into a Miata? If you were going to...
If I was going to make it a track car, yes. Top ends, I'd probably do 10. Is probably what I would look at, because you could find decent ones for probably 7 or 8, and then if you want to go cheap, 6 or less. So I would say 10 is probably where you'd find something real healthy. And if you're going to engine swap it, I mean you can drop that down.
Well, all right, let's remove an engine swap out of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just say, all right, you're going to go shopping for a car, you found the Miata that you wanted, it's for ease of numbers, it's $10,000, right?
Yeah,
pretty clean car. Now we're talking about a roll cage. Mm-hmm. So we're probably talking 5 to 10 grand for a proper cage.
Well, I think the Miata guys can get onto the track with just a roll bar, right?
Okay. So call it 2 grand for a decent roll bar.
Okay.
Like a nice roll bar. Okay. Now we're talking about possibly seats and harnesses. That's going to be probably another grand right there. Just seats alone can get expensive.
Yeah.
Safety equipment, you know, helmet, suit, stuff like that. Tires, right? Track specific tires, or even just performance specific tires. So by the time, like, you start adding all this up, even just in the case of a Miata where you want to do some decent racing, your initial investment is going to be $25,000-$30,000 by the time you shake everything out, right? And that, right. And if you're fortunate enough to say you've got a truck and a flatbed trailer or an enclosed trailer to get it around, that's a whole nother expense on top of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're looking at per race, weekend, tires. So, you know, for a season, you could, for a racing season, you could be spending upwards of $30,000-$40,000 to really kind of have at it.
Right.
So in the case of like one of those prototype cars, like say the Sebeco or like a used Radical or something like that, your upfront expense might be a little bit more, but if you were to try to get your Miata up to those speeds, like you think about it, it's almost slightly affordable. Like,
so it's more like, it's more like price
bracket, but still,
it's more like a upfront investment is what you're saying, that you can kind of save yourself from a long-term expenses of kind of little bits of here and there. And you can kind of just have a complete package right off the bat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't want to sort of lean on those things too much, but you know, I think the bigger thing is like, how does one, like, what would be a car, like you probably have a biased opinion here just because of, you know, I brought Miata, but like, is, what would you think would be a car that you would want to race? Would you want to do a front engine setup? Do you want to do front drive, rear drive, mid engine?
Like, yeah. If I was getting on, I guess it really depends obviously on what kind of motorsport I was trying to do, but let's just say it's road racing or something like that. Let's just say it's road racing. I would probably find myself into a rear wheel drive car or a all wheel drive car is probably what I would do. I don't know about how picky I would be in terms of choosing the platform. I mean, price would play a factor for me. Cause I don't got that money like that. And then, you know, I don't know anything with an LSD. You know, obviously I would want a stick shift. I don't think I'll ever want to get on a track without a stick shift. And then I don't know anything with LSD. So that leaves you with tons of options on whether it's a E46 platform or whatever, because you can get into a 330. They come with LSDs, or you can get into, if you want to go more expensive, you can go to an M3. If you can find a good one. So, you know, like all that kind of stuff. And then obviously a whole bunch of JDM stuff. Like I would love to get in there with, like you said, MR2 earlier. MR2 would be great. I don't know. I mean, there's plenty of things that I feel would be affordable that are way different than what you were saying with the Sebeco. Because in my head, that sounds almost like not possible to me. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, even if it's a 2G Eclipse or whatever it may be, I mean, there are tons of things I would want to get on track with. MR2 Spider, all those kind of things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, one of the cars I saw quite a bit of at the Optima event, for example, was C5 Corvettes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
What is? I mean, you do the Facebook Marketplace hunting occasionally.
All the time.
What are C5s going for?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think they're starting to drop down. I can't tell you that I've actually been looking for C5s because I have not, but I would change my answer that if I was actually genuinely looking to get on track and have a race car and do it for real. if I want my best bang for my buck, I would change my answer. I would go Corvette. You're right. I would wow. go Corvette. I think that's the best bang for your buck on what you can really get. I mean, you're gonna come with, you know, you have a high torque engine. It comes with it comes with a manual gearbox, and you're gonna have just kind of like a race car just from the factory. But yeah, so that one, that's pretty expensive. 21,000 to 60. Oh, that's a mileage. So yeah, 21 grand. I'm sure you can find them in worse condition for less. So I guess you're talking like 17 grand or something like that, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, LS engine, great platform. Mm-hmm. You know, the insert JC Whitney catalog for all your accessories you want to do, stuff like that.
Well, the cool thing too about the Corvettes is that you can take that to a whole bunch of different motorsports. You could do road racing or endurance racing or time attack or drifting. You could do all that stuff with that car.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's dare I say, like the Swiss Army knife. You know, it's almost like, dare I even put the Miata and the C5 kind of in the same conversation?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if you're going to see it on a drag strip, but that's about it.
No. No, I mean, definitely won't see a Miata on drag strip, but like you'll see a Maybe. C5. Well, yeah, I guess
there's some crazy people out there. Like the, oh my God, I'm forgetting his name, but the guy from DIY Gang on YouTube, okay. He had a Miata with a Hellcat engine in it, which was just insane. I'm sure that thing would blow the freaking, you know, drag strip off. I mean,
yeah, but I don't know. I would argue that ruins the experience of the car itself. Granted, I'm sure that thing is a party, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, like you put 800 horsepower in the front end of a Miata, the rear doesn't stand a chance no matter what you do to it.
Right.
But, you know, the Miata is sort of hailed as like this very neutral driving car, mm-hmm. that, you know, like you look at the IMSA events and they have the Mazda MX-5 Cup. And it's funny, like I've been to a couple IMSA events and, you know, everyone's like, oh, like, you know, GTP, like, you know, all the pro race classes and all the heads of state of like major programs. And all of a sudden they announce the MX-5 Cup and everyone turns their back to their conversations and eyes are glued on the track.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's to see how those guys jump around on the track. Like you could be in first place for like all of 30 seconds. The next, you know, you're in last.
Right.
And they are. Like there's not even elbow room for getting around. I mean, they're rubbing all over the place. You know, it's such a great platform to start racing with. And I was like, as we're talking about this, like, what are more affordable ways of getting into it? And like Lemons keeps popping up, right?
Yeah.
And if anything, I would argue that maybe Lemons could be the better starting point for someone interested in racing, because one, barrier of entry, I think they have a limit, like it's super, super low cost.
I think it's like $1,000.
Yeah, if even that, right?
Yeah.
Like you're buying a total, like the definition of a beater.
Right.
You're learning the mechanics.
Beaters being a little nice. I know what you want to say, but we won't say it.
You mean a total shit can?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, S-Box.
It's like, I conversate back and forth a couple of buddies of mine, and like they're like, oh dude, get a shit box, and
right.
Like get that meme of like Homer like patting the seat on the couch, like come here and play with me kind of
right.
thing. But Lemons, like, okay, you gotta find the event, you gotta learn to wrench on a car, you gotta learn to revive something. It won't be the greatest race experience, but man, if you're looking to put laps down and understand car mechanics and what it does, I mean, outside of like SCCA and stuff like that, I mean,
yeah.
Let me know of a better program. You know?
Yeah, there are a lot of, I'll tell you this, SCCA for autocross and stuff, autocross doesn't appeal to me in a really high way at all. Like, you know, obviously I know that SCCA is considered probably, or autocross is considered probably the biggest motorsport in the country, but I don't know, something about the parking lot driving and whatever it may be with the cones, it just feels, yeah, a little bit less kind of glorious than being on track.
Well, you say that, but it's an incredible like learning to drive experience, right?
Yeah.
One.
Oh, I mean, people who do it are hell, you know, incredible drivers, I'm sure. But you know, I don't know.
Well, the great drivers is a great way to learn how to drive.
Yeah.
It's also the type of course where, like, if you're canyon driving, you're out doing some stuff, you're like third, fourth gear kind of a stuff. Whereas autocross is like first, second, third.
Yeah.
right? Like you're it's very tight, very quick, to the point, can't really draw things out. That's very similar to like how the Optima event is, but with Optima, like they'll usually do like an autocross day. They'll do like a track day and then some other stuff in between. So you really kind of get the full spectrum of what's available. And I think they're traveling the US. I even saw this dude with a Tesla there, and I was at the race at Laguna Seca this year for Speed Tour. And that dude comes off track, smoke billowing out the front, and everyone's like, oh shoot, fire, fire, fire. And like, dude cooked his brakes so bad, they thought it was a battery fire.
Oh, wow.
And his pads and rotors had basically seized together when he tried to finally drive off, running and skidding, and finally cracked loose and got going again. But like, that was a random tangent. But like, you know, even you have folks that are traveling across the US for those sort of experiences, like, you know, a relatively simple event. But I guess the bigger sort of underlying benefit that I see with like track driving, it just, one, learning how to be a better driver across the board, and then how to fix stuff like in a pinch. Like there's some ingenuity that comes from something that happens on track and like try to get it back up and going again, that it's kind of hard to get that experience elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up the Miatas a couple of times or whatever it may be. For me, with my car, I've always felt like the possibility is there. If I wanted to go take an HPDE course or whatever it may be, I feel like the only thing I really need is I have the tires for a track right now. I could my summer tires are good enough to go on track. And then all I would really need, I think, is just be a roll bar and a helmet. I think that's all I would really need. So in that sense, costs are pretty low.
They are.
You know? Like, but, you know, obviously I paid probably a little much for my car, but if you had a Miata that you paid a little bit less for than I did, that's not that much of an investment. Like, that's why I really like the car, more than one reason why I really like the car. But, you know, so that's really cool. And again, if I had a Corvette, I feel like it'd be, you know, obviously then it's a little different because you need a whole roll cage or whatever it may be, but the power is there for the Corvette, which is a little more fun.
Well, I mean, the Corvette, you know, I think it would enable you to do a wider array of events.
Yeah.
So like in our case, right? So Formula Drift, you know, you could go to a lot of drift events with that car pretty easily. The Miata might hamstring you a little bit just because of the wheelbase, and they could be real snappy in that sense if you don't have the power to just keep it going. I see it being more of like, you know, a road course car than a drift car, but like C5, you could do road course, you could probably do drift. Might be a little big for autocross.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure there are people who do it though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, that you're manhandling that car to get it around. And I mean, there's ways of doing it, just as there is for any car. But sort of, all right, let's do a little bit of a round robin situation. Like, all right, front engine, rear wheel drive, what would be your pick?
Well, again, are you going to choose a particular motorsport or just across the board?
Let's do road course. Like you're going to do a track day event at, say, like, you know, a Road America or insert, you know, X racetrack across the US is near someone, like road course.
I'm going to go S2000. What about you?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I'm going to go S2000. What about you?
I can't fit in those.
That's probably true. Honestly,
I'm like probably like 2 inches too tall for an S2000. Like, yeah, that's just shoehorning.
A little short flex right there. There you go. A little small flex on me.
Man, I would almost go a 350Z for like road course.
Okay, cool.
I mean, you know, like dope little setup, front engine, rear wheel drive, pretty well balanced, not too big. C5 would be cool, but I don't know. I just America, like, I appreciate it, but you know, LS is tough to beat, but
yeah,
I think 350Z is kind of the way to go. Yeah. Front engine, front wheel drive.
You go first. I need a second on that one.
I would do like an Integra.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
I think an Integra would be a party. That or like an older Civic SI.
I was gonna say CTR. I was gonna say Civic Type R. That's probably where I would go.
Yeah, but Integra, like, I see a bunch of those at, you know, because that to me feels like a good road course car.
Yeah, for sure.
Not too big, not too small. I mean, upgrades up the wazoo, anything you can get your hands on.
Actually,
one that came up, but I think it requires too much work, and this is kind of like rewinding a little bit, front engine rear wheel drive, is like Porsche 944s.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
However, I would not do it with the Porsche motor.
Okay.
That particular Porsche motor, yes, I am slightly biased to that brand just because what's in my garage, but LS swap, baby. Or would be probably even crazier to do is a K swapped 944.
Isn't the 944 more of just like the black sheep? Like,
that's a 928. That's even more of a black sheep.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's like 928. They're really cool, great cars. Well, great cars are relative terms, especially who you talk to, but like, they've got more gremlins than the movie Gremlins does. Like, it's just, you know, there's a lot to those cars, and they have this crazy look and shape to them. A very interesting time in Porsche's history.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 928 is like the redheaded stepchild of the Porsche lineage. But 944 is, you know, like the lesser expensive version of that car. I guess it depends on who you talk to, but I saw one of those built up this past weekend at the Road America event, and it LS swapped. The thing was nasty. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, sign me up, please. Nice. Like, I am all about that. Mid-engine.
Uh-huh.
Now, like, what would be your mid-engine car?
Oh, my God. You got to go first on that one. I can't even think of two mid-engine cars at the moment, to be honest, but go for it.
NSX.
Okay, that's right. NSX is considered mid-engine. That's funny.
Not necessarily affordable, but like the, I mentioned earlier that MR2 that was at the event, and like that dude has shoehorned some rubber underneath that thing.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I think technically the S2000 is actually considered a front mid-engine car.
How far back is that motor?
It's past the axle.
Yeah.
So. So I think technically the S2000 is considered a mid-engine car, but no, if that's the case, I would go NSX too, of course. Of course. I mean, how would I?
I mean, definitely not affordable, yeah. But you know, I guess if there was the affordable version of it, would be an MR2.
Yeah, of course.
Again, another car I don't think I could fit into.
You could fit into an MR2. You'll be fine. They got back seats.
You sure?
You could put it all the way back.
Yeah. I was, a buddy of mine was at the event, and he has a C8, and I couldn't even fit in that thing. Like, I was hitting my head on the top roll bar of his car. I'm like,
another car. People are going to think you're 6'9".
No, I'm only like maybe 6'4", like 6'3", 6'4". But there's just something about that C8, man. I just was like, it really let me down, honestly.
All right. So if you were doing I'm going to throw one at you. If you're doing a front engine car, all wheel drive.
WRX.
WRX is what you're going with?
Yeah.
Not even STI, huh?
No, because, I mean, STI would be a part of it. I mean, if I could find, like an 05 or 06 STI,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't completely just bastardized and beat to hell.
Yeah, you're talking about the impossible.
I know, right? Like, years ago, I almost got an 04, but 04s kind of stand on their own pedestal kind of a thing. And
why's that?
If I recall, like, there's... I think they have a different bolt pattern in their wheels. Like, the 04 was like its own unique little being.
04 and 05 are the same body.
Same body, but I think there were differences underneath.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I can't confirm that, but that's interesting.
But yeah, I actually almost bought one years ago. And I mean, STI would be cool, but I think if we're trying to get into this where like let's spend as little as money as possible to maximize our time, you know, maximize whatever we can on the track, you know, you could probably put more, you know, what would be, okay, so like say like an 07 WRX versus an STI.
Mm-hmm.
Price difference is what, $5,000-$6,000?
Yeah, used, yep.
Okay, so $5,000 equates to how many tires? And
quite a bit.
Track time. Right.
Quite a bit.
So, you know, you could get, you know, that $5,000 would get you probably two extra sets of tires. You could get an extra set of rims for that amount.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have plenty of money left over for consumables to get as many track days in or race events in as possible. You know, especially like when you're starting off, yeah, you just want to maximize track time. And that point, then you start getting into like, as you build up your time, Then you look at cars that are only running like, you know, maybe an hour on the weekend, but like, you know, to run that hour is, it's getting up there. WRX would be my vote, because I could do more with it, more in the sense of more driving with it.
I'm going to do your counterpart to that. If I did an all-wheel drive front engine, I would just do an Evo 9. That's what I would do.
Ring that baby out, dude.
Yeah, that's what I would do. If you could find one that's not, you know, beat the crap, like you said, I guess all those cars kind of get abused and used pretty hard.
But, well, and maybe that's the beauty in buying like a track-specific car, because, you know, there's some events I've gone to, and I'll see, like, you know, from the outside, like a really cool, like old school, like BMW 2002. It's got this great big white body kit on it. And I look inside and I'm like, oof, that's a tough pill to swallow. Cause it's just like a bird's nest of wiring and things all over the place. And I guess, you know, what is the intended track, you know, the intended purpose of a track car? And that's frankly just seat time. Yeah. And, you know, getting to, does the inside of the car really matter? And, you know, I guess understanding of like, how nice of a car do you buy to cannibalize for track only driving?
Yeah, I know. What's the, how close is the nearest track to you?
Well,
for the record, John's now, in Tennessee.
Yeah. So I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee, and, Road Atlanta is probably 3 hours as crow's fly for me.
Mm-hmm. So not that close, because our closest track is Englishtown, which is, you know, 2 hours or 2.5 hours from us.
Right.
But or English Lime Rock, which is 2 hours too, as well.
Right. But Englishtown is more, looks like more of a drag strip, and there is a bit of a road course there. But
yeah,
like,
there is.
You know, but if you're trying to compare road courses, if there was an hour difference between Englishtown, this is not to be disrespectful to Englishtown by any stretch of the imagination, but if I had an hour driving difference between, say, Englishtown and Road Atlanta, mm-hmm. I would probably choose Road Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, I know Jim goes up to New York Safety Motorsport Park. Is that what it's called? Something like that. But I know Jim goes there rather than Lime Rock or Englishtown or even Jersey Motorsport Park, which he goes there as well. But that's like a 3.5 hour drive from us, Jersey Motorsport Park. But,
and for you guys, I mean, Lime Rock is what, 2.5 hours?
Yeah, I don't know how accessible it is to really get on track at Lime Rock when there's, like, you know, I guess you guys just take a HPDE course. I think you have to just do that, really, just to even get on that track, unless you're doing grid life or whatever.
Yeah, they have a lot of track days. Like, for example, SVRA goes there, mm-hmm. and with SVRA, you can, as long as you go through safety and you meet the qualifications for it. I think a lot of folks lose sight of that series in particular because, you know, SCCA is a great program, but SVRA, you can pretty much get away with a similar setup. Mm-hmm. And even though it's set up as like a vintage series, it's cars that are 5 years from their, there's like a 5 year window of when you could put a car in the vintage event. So, I mean, Lime Rock would be a fantastic track to go to. We do have another track that is being built right now. That's called Flat Rock. That's about 30 miles from my house.
That's cool.
But Flat Rock is like thermal on steroids. So again, well above my pay grade, because it's like they have, it's like a members thing. So you, there's even real estate for sale, stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So I'm sure at some point they'll have like track days and stuff like that that are more affordable. Yeah, not for me anytime soon.
Cool.
You know, I think a lot of this topic recently came up. I'm fortunate enough to have a car in the garage that, you know, would be a party to race, but come time for like replacements and consumables, it gets real expensive. Like my first world problems.
Yep.
My 911, like my 70T is an awesome car. I actually love it for track time and like driving and stuff like that. But man, if I wad that thing up, that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
And like, I, you know, now more than ever, I was like, okay, like what would be a fun track car that you put some miles on and not really worry about if something happens to it?
Sebeco.
No.
I'm joking.
But, you know, and like, there was another, I think I even shared a couple links with you guys, like older, like 3 series, like 328s. You know, like Those things would be a party for
I think drive. So.
I mean, the one I saw recently here had like an S52 swap and like, you know, some folks LS those things and like so much motor for that chassis. One of our
racers who Reza Arsham, who's Go-Go Gear Racing, he races in USTCC. And I know he also races in another series that is specific to the BMW 318T platform. That's the only car you can drive in that series. And he showed it to me, and it's just so funny because, one, that car is like super rare. You never see them on the road. They're not a beloved car. It's like totally just like a kind of a weird car. And he rides in a series, runs a series that is for that car specifically. And I'm just like, that's so strange, and something like that kind of appeals to me, because, you know, it's kind of like a more level playing field. You know that everyone's kind of a similar thing to you, and you don't feel so maybe you know, at a disadvantage if you don't have, you know, quite the same kind of program.
You know, I just, as you're talking about that, I did a quick search here for like 318s. I'm like,
318T though, it's a weird one. It's I believe it's 318T. TI, maybe that's what it is, yeah.
And like, I just found one here, a 318, a 96 318 TI.
It's like a funky two-door, like kind of weird slant back hatchback type of looking thing, right?
Yeah, it's a two-door hatchback.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's sort of in this like confused state of like, am I a four-door with a hatch? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm I'm the future blueprint for a Prius, is what it looks like. It's funny.
So here's one. It, you know, like 98 318 TI for $9,800.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm sure there's some gremlins you got to figure out to, you know, make it a little bit more trackable, but tons of support, like, mm-hmm. you know, chassis support, relatively easy to work on. Like, I don't know if I would tackle the motor, but that's just, you know, I'm understanding my level of mechanical aptitude.
Right.
But, I mean, BMWs are sort of hailed as like great, you know, the driving machine, right? Driver's car. And if they're doing a spec series for it, you know, your barrier of entry is lower. So if you're on a field of other drivers that are in the same sort of spin bracket as you and don't mind a couple, you know, dings and scratches, it can make for some really exciting racing.
That's what I would like. See, that like super appeals to me. Instead of getting onto, I don't know, a time attack event or something, and you're just, you know, you're just like here, like, yeah, I'm just having fun. Meanwhile, people are out there with, you know, serious shit going on, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I think we've covered quite a few that would be solid cars to consider getting into. Oh, actually, the search here is an 88 318i wagon.
Nice.
But 24 grand.
The one thing I would say too, in terms of other motorsports or just getting started with an affordable thing, I know that with younger kids or whatever it may be, or people who are just kind of younger than I am, I know drifting is appealing a lot to a lot of youth, and I think rightfully so. I think sim racing has a lot to do with it as well. But like for me in particular, I must just say, just in terms of motorsports, like, the most events I've been to have been drifting related, and I've seen a lot of drifting in person. I think it's so cool. I love drifting. I think it's sick. But personally, I don't think I would ever get into it personally. There's just something about the whole, like, super, super high maintenance. You're always hitting walls. You're always hitting people. You're always breaking stuff. And it's always that kind of like quick turnaround of repair, put your money into the car, break it, fix it, all that kind of stuff. It kind of just like hurts my head and hurts my soul a little bit. Like,
just to see all those cars getting just beat up.
Yeah, if it was my car, I think it would hurt me a lot. Like, it's like, I guess you have to love it enough to the point where it's all worth it. But like, oh man, what does it sound so much better to just have everything you need for the season, and the only thing that's going to stop you from enjoying your season is like a more catastrophic kind of you know, unforeseen accident or whatever it may be. Like, that feels so much better to me than like, yeah, we're going to this track and there's a freaking wall there and you're bound to hit it. And yeah, when you do, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I love about Finland, Finland in racing, like, you know, motorsport and driving and stuff like that. And like, I know I kind of veered off there for a second, but like, as we were kind of talking about series to get into, The national sport of Finland is motorsport.
Okay.
And they have a racing series that if you win, like if you win your race, basically the last place person could buy your car and then turn on and race it. So really what it's rewarding is pure driver. And the cars could basically be, you know, very cyclical is how it goes through the field of people buying and kind of moving them around. And you look at those things and they are, they're beaters, like total beat the hell cars. I was trying to look up the name of the series, but like, and there's kids that are racing like 12, 13, 14 years old, you know, against grandmas that are racing. And it's like, man, we need something like that here in the States.
Totally.
We need younger drivers. And like, I'm all for like competitive driving and like, you know, there's kart racing and like outlaws and all sorts of stuff. But like these folks are rallying these things and it's just, it's a party to watch. Yeah, I know I kind of veered off there for a second, but you know.
No, but I feel you.
It's like we need more racing here in the States, or I'm sure it's probably here, but finding it's the challenge.
Yeah, you know what's not going to help that? It's going to be selling and all the closing of tracks.
Yeah, but there's also ones opening too,
which is good to hear. I don't think we're ever going to see a new one open by us. I just don't think that's ever going to happen personally. But
yeah, I mean that's something we've been battling. You know, as a nation for quite some time. I mean, look at what Cletus McFarland's been going through with his track down in Florida, you know, where developers are popping around him. He's like, hey, you moved into my neck of the woods. I didn't move into your neck of the woods.
Right.
Why am I being penalized for something I'm trying to grow and do, but you can grow and build something that penalizes me?
Because they want that space and they want that money.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, maybe we're just, maybe the part of the challenge is we're not prioritizing sort of, you know, experiences, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's, how do we become better drivers, not easier drivers? And track time really helps promote folks to be better drivers, at least in my opinion.
I think if I was someone who had the power to, you know, potentially implement opening a track somewhere, whatever it would be, I would just show whoever I need to show all the videos of all those idiots who like to do the no hesi driving and the speeding in traffic and doing all that crazy stuff and just be like, hey, like, let's get people driving off the street like madmen and have people have an area to drive, you know, separately, like, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that's the same person. There's no, that might have been a completely wrong thing to say in the sense that I don't know if opening a track would actually get those people to go because might not be the same people. But in theory, I feel like that's strong enough.
Well, and, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, we see, you know, reels all the time of like street takeovers and folks drifting in the middle of the street and doing the stuff or like, you know, like street drag racing, it's been happening for years. Like it's nothing new. But unfortunately things happen, right? And that's what cracks down on things and, you know, negative consequences come from it. Yeah. And in the case of track driving, sure, it's a little bit more of an upfront cost. You've got to plan for a little bit more, but man, like the experiences are just that much better as opposed to like running from Johnny Law, like you got to catch me kind of a deal and like all that nonsense. Like it's just, how do we promote more of that? You know, not the Johnny Law side of it, but more of the track driving experience of it. And, you know, maybe part of it is just finding, you know, affordable cars that, you know, we can go beat on the track and, you know, not have massive commitments to.
Yeah.
And just get our aggression out there.
I agree. Hey, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. More track driving, please.
I would say so. Yeah.
Well, anything else on the track side of thing you want to cover?
No, you good?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Awesome. All right, cool, guys. And thank you for tuning in. We'll put out another podcast next week, and we'll see you next time.
That was just our rambling. See ya.